Greetings, WBHF listeners. This is Mike Garcia in the studio of WBHF right here in downtown Cartersville. And I'm here with all three Republican candidates for State Senate District 37. From my left to right, I have Ed Setzler, Scott Johnson, and David Delk. Welcome to Bartow County, gentlemen.
Great to be with you.
Good to be with you today.
Thank you.
So obviously, in case people are wondering, we've had some reapportionment. We were used to having Bartow County kind of split down the middle as far as their state senate. It's changed, and now Emerson and Southeast Bartow County are in District 37. You guys are mostly based in Cobb County, but we know that every citizen counts in the district, so we want you to go ahead and introduce yourselves to them. We'll start with David.
Yeah, David Delk. I've lived in West Cobb for 37 years, married to my wife for 37 years, Tricia. Two daughters that grew up, went to Harrison High School, and now are grown up and married on their own. I've worked for 25 years in the ministry of the Fellowship of Christian Athletes, and happy to be a candidate in the race.
And then real briefly, why did you decide to run?
Well, several reasons, but one reason was 2020, watching the election returns kind of bothered me as a citizen. A lot of things that took place on election night that seemed to be wrong. And so therefore, after that, I started thinking, you know, what can I do to contribute to the making things better? And I decided to, you know, put my name in the hat to run for the Senate seat. So after some time in prayer and thinking about my kids and grandkids, I decided to get into the race.
Scott Johnson, welcome aboard. Go ahead and introduce yourself and explain why you're running.
Thanks, Mike. It's good to be with you all and good to connect with the listeners here in Bartow County today. I'm Scott Johnson, candidate for State Senate, and I'm excited that this the South Bartow, the Emerson, Allatoona area is part of District 37 now. As a matter of fact, where I live in West Cobb, it shares a lot of the same traits. We're semi-rural, very family-oriented, conservative, and want good government. And that's why I'm running. I'm a Georgia native. I've lived in this district for 30 years, and I'm concerned about what I've seen in this nation for the last 15 months. Well, far longer than that, but particularly since the Biden presidency. Don't want to see a Stacey Abrams led Georgia take up that mantle that of just bad policy that we've seen in at the national level. So I stepped up to run. This is my first run for office, but I've been involved in the political process, helping other people get elected for a long time. And I've been on the State Board of Education for 10 years, and that's a big priority for me, is our schools, our students, and our families, and giving those parents the say-so in their children's education.
Ed Setzler, again, welcome to Bartow County and the new district. Go ahead and introduce yourself and explain why you've decided to take the next step up to State Senate.
Well, pleasure being with you today. I was I'm a father of four, husband, been raising a family in the Ackworth area for a number of years. In fact, it was not that long ago that I decided to run for office. I was a young dad, looked around, and I felt like regular folks ought to have a voice in politics. It just seemed like the system was set up in a way that regular folks in regular neighborhoods or lived out in the country on land just didn't really have a voice at the Capitol. I wanted to be a common sense conservative voice to really fight for regular people, and that's been my whole service in office. I've been serving a few years in the state legislature, in the state house. In fact, I could have taken a really easy walk into the state house had I chose to go that direction. But I believe that the community of West Cobb and South Bartow County is worthy of good, aggressive, proven conservative leadership. And that's what I've endeavored to do my entire time in office. I'm a veteran, Army leader, business leader, and I've been fighting for things that really matter to folks at the state capitol. And I think we need to have folks that have been proven they can win on conservative issues for regular folks at the capitol. And that's why I decided to run for state senate.
All right. And we're going to go kind of hodgepodge with a whole bunch of different topics. I'll stick with you, Ed. What's your stance on our current state income tax, and are there any changes that you would make?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. Since 2018, we have taken 15% off the state income tax. You know, the state income tax represents more than 50% of the revenue coming to the state of Georgia. So, you know, as folks talk about that, there'll be candidates out there that talk about, oh, we need to eliminate the income tax. That's 50% of state revenue. What I believe we can do, and what we put in place this legislative session, was we dropped the income tax with the biggest tax cut in Georgia history, voted on that and passed that this year. And we put in place what I believe is a way to move in the direction of eliminating the income tax, which is a steady walk in the same direction. We are stepping income tax down to 0.10%, a tenth of a percent a year between now and 2029. If we chip away at that in that direction, we can whittle it down and eliminate it. But we just can't roll the dice, eliminate it overnight, and ignore 50% of our state revenues. We led on that, something I campaigned on, and we delivered it this year. And the citizens of Georgia, I think, can thank existing legislators for fighting for that and making those hard decisions. And again, taking that steady walk in the same direction that over time we can dramatically reduce our income tax, possibly even eliminate it.
And what would make up for the income tax? Where would the additional revenue come from?
If you step it down over time, over the course of more than a decade, the growth in the state, the revenue increases through other sources can begin to grow to cover that. And that's why we're stepping it down slowly over time. We've taken it from 6% to 5.5%. One thing folks need to understand is that in Georgia, unlike Florida and Texas, we have very low property taxes. Texas, Florida in particular, they pay a whole lot more of their taxes in property taxes. So even though they're a no-income tax state, when you look at the total taxation picture, it's a very, very different picture. We fortunately have lower local taxes, and we collect more at the state level, and that's why stepping it down over time is the way to move towards the elimination of the income tax.
Scott Johnson, your take on it.
Well, thank you. You know, I was just watching Fox and Friends this morning, and Gary Sinise was on there, who's done a lot of great work, and he was making the point, I'm moving from L.A. to Tennessee. And they said, well, why are you moving to Tennessee? And one of the things he said, well, it's a no-income tax state. And that's true. We are, you know, we're kind of surrounded by states that don't tax income. And I'm not going to say that taxing income is the perfect way to go, but it is an important part of of the way we pay for government. We all know we have to pay for roads, education, prisons, the things that are public safety, the things that are essential to society. And when you look at states like Florida or Tennessee, as Ed said, they have a higher property tax, yes. They also have a much higher, by multiples in some cases, sales taxes. So, you know, funds to support the things that we must provide for our citizens has to come from somewhere. I think Georgia is on the right track of lowering state income taxes. Would I like to see it done away with? Sure, but that's the easy answer. The practical answer is let's continue on the process of lowering our state income tax rate and finding efficient ways to pay for the government that we need.
Okay, David Delk.
All right. Well, definitely need to lower it, but I think that Georgia could eliminate the state income tax altogether. And so, you know, there's a surplus in our state right now. So that means that, you know, we've been getting a pretty good, you know, level of taxes from our citizens. So if we've got a surplus, that means that, you know, the government's been taking more than enough. And I think that if we eliminate the state income tax, we'll be fine. And, you know, Georgia or Florida and Tennessee have been doing that. So I think, you know, we can do that as well and be just fine.
And when the surplus goes, how would you replace the lost revenue from eliminating the state?
Well, the consumption of goods, you know, will offset that. So the more money you put in the pockets of people, the more willing they are to spend. So if you tax them, they don't have that income. But if you give it back, then they're willing to go out and spend the money and, you know, whatever they buy, then, you know, you get a tax from that.
All right. This next question, I'll start off with Scott. I want you to go ahead, since you've been in there, assess the current state of the quality of the Georgia educational system.
You know, 10 years ago when I first came on, the Governor Deal appointed me to the State Board of Education, our performance numbers were not so good in comparison to other states. We have made progress in comparison to other states, and particularly with our graduation rate. Georgia's graduating more more seniors today than with their class they started with, their cohorts, than ever before. And that's something that we can be proud of. We've got a lot of opportunity in Georgia to give put parents in charge, and that is put them in charge of their education with public school choice, but with also other choices for parents like charter schools. I've been a big proponent of charter schools when I chaired that committee on the state board, and when I chaired the entire state board. A big proponent of giving options, flexibility for kids to be able to find the path that works for them. Maybe it's a 4-year college degree, and maybe it isn't. But we've got a lot of opportunities in Georgia. Being the number one state to do business in, we've got a lot of jobs. We've got a lot of opportunities. I always tell students when they're graduating, hey, you, even if you go off somewhere else to college, come back to Georgia to work, because this is where the opportunity is. And I'm a supporter of parents having the options when they don't find what they need in our public schools, then they ought to have options to make the choices that best fit their student, best fit their families.
David?
Yeah, I mean, the education system, you know, for our area where we live is great. One of the things that I'm concerned about is the indoctrination of our students. Critical race theory and this gender identification is really concerning to a lot of parents, but if you look at school choices, we've got a lot of school choices in Cobb County. We have the opportunity to make it better. But education so far in our area has been really good. But at the same time, as a parent who's concerned about their children, having been with the ministry for many years, I've kept my finger on the pulse of what what our kids are learning. And it is concerning what's happening at a national level with critical race and gender and everything else that, you know, the far left is wanting to impose upon our children. So I think our children have to be protected. I think our children need to be watched, you know, closely what they're learning in schools. I think there's also, you know, they're our future of tomorrow. So I think we have to invest in them, you know, heavily.
Ed?
Yeah, I think the points that folks are thinking about right now with respect to education is, let me step back and address something. You know, we in the legislature this year, I'm honored to have led on this, the elimination of critical race theory and divisive concepts, this idea that schools are teaching kids that people are just fundamentally different because of their skin color. We put a hammer on that this year. I'm glad to have gone to the well of the House to help win that issue in committee. Also, saving girls' sports, the idea that biological males can compete against women. And we gave the power of the Georgia High School Association to stop that and make sure that never happens in Georgia high school sports. Honored to have helped lead on that this year. Folks out there have been heard, and we've acted and led on that. I'm proud to say that got done in 2022. Beyond that, looking back, I mean, the time I've served on the House Education Committee, you know, we've put in place a requirement for all school districts to spend 65% of all their spending inside the classroom. You know, at one point, the Atlanta Public Schools spent less than 50% of everything they took in the classroom. In fact, there were four people at APS that had over $400,000 jobs in the district office. We put a kibosh on that and guaranteed 65% to be spent in the classroom in a way that looks much more like Cobb and Bartow County, but made sure that happened statewide. And we made sure there was rigor, but also increases in graduation rates. We've had Governor Perdue, followed by Governor Deal, have really had historic records of success there. And also, we can't forget something I've helped lead on, Senate Bill 3, sponsored by Senator Lindsey Tippins in the Senate, sponsored by me in the House, kind of reinvigorated technical education. I mean, to make sure that kids in high school have relevancy. And if they want to go to a technical degree program or a diploma program after high school, they're getting the experience in high school, the hands-on experience in the workplace to make that real for them. That's a vitally important thing when we think about all of Georgia. And then lastly, just making sure that choices exist for parents. You know, there's a lot of parents who live, single moms working two jobs, keep the lights on. They don't have the ability to homeschool. They don't have the ability to afford private school. And they don't sometimes have the ability to move to a district where the public schools even work for them. charter schools give those single parents, those folks struggling financially, an opportunity to give their put their kid in a school of choice that meets their personal needs. And that, above everything else in education, I think is our highest goal, is to meet the needs of every kid as an individual.
And really quickly before I move on, as far as adding to the charter schools, or first off, were any of you guys in favor of vouchers, real quick?
Well, it depends on what you mean by that. I support school choice.
Right.
That includes thriving public schools, traditional schools, charter schools, and school choice options for parents. Yes, sir. I certainly do.
So my question is how can you – I obviously there are some school systems that are doing much better than other school systems. Would you guys be pulling public money away from the struggling school systems to go into the charter schools, David?
Well, I mean, you know, school choice should be available for everyone. I don't know that we're pulling money away from struggling schools. You know, they're getting a good share of the funding that they need. So it's a matter of what schools are performing well and, you know, what meets the need of the family. So I'm not sure that that's going to be affecting, you know, schools that are struggling.
Scott?
Yeah, so we have some of the very best public schools here in this district. I'm proud to say in Bartow and Cartersville and in Cobb. However, those schools don't always meet the needs of every student. Let me give you an example. My grandson, who is a second grader, Cobb schools are great. And I've got grandchildren in Cobb public schools, and I've got them in Mount Perrin Christian School as well. For Luke, however, his needs weren't being met in the school he was in. So the option to take a scholarship provided by the state, and thankfully these options are increasing and funding is increasing for these options to get a scholarship to be able to go to a special needs scholarship, to be able to go to Mount Perrin Christian, where he is getting the education resources that he needs. That's made all the difference for him. It's not about all kids, it's about every kid, and it's about every kid as an individual, and that's how we have to address education in this state, and I'm glad we are.
Yeah, I reject the premise that it's an either-or proposition. I believe we can treasure our public schools, fully fund our schools, and we've been fully funding the QBE funding formula. We gave, you know, in the last 4 years, we gave teachers a $5,000 pay raise. That's, again, a promise that Governor Kemp made that was supported by the legislature. We need to treasure, fully fund, and equip our public schools. And once we've done that, then above and beyond that, we can, as we have in Georgia, fund special needs scholarship programs. My wife had a good friend whose daughter went to one of the very best high schools in Cobb County, and that high school in particular for her was a bad place because just some of the things that happened to her there. So you can't just look at the performance of test scores in high schools and say that works for every kid. Every kid needs to have an opportunity. Every kid, again, if we can serve each individual kid well, after having fully funded our schools, fully funded our programs for low-income schools, then, as we have, we can layer on top of that school choice options for parents. And I'm honored to have been part of leading that for Georgia.
All right. Another hot button topic in this state for the last couple of years, election integrity. I'll start with David. Go ahead and assess currently how the state of Georgia is doing as far as conducting the elections.
Well, I think if you looked at the 2020 elections, we're all concerned about election integrity. And I just recently signed on with the Cobb GOP to make sure that election integrity is taken seriously. I think, you know, one of the things that we need to do is get rid of the Dominion voting machines that seemed to be compromised in the last election. And so I think if we go to a secure system, such as just going back to paper ballots, making sure that our polls are, you know, watched over and you know, poll watchers have equal access to the election integrity of our you know, elections, I think, you know, that's something that we need to consider. But at the same time, I think we have we have a lot of things that were unanswered in this last election, and I think that to make sure that that doesn't happen again, that causes a lot of angst for people wondering if their vote really counts.
Ed?
Yeah, I think people's common sense and their guts is telling them, right, there are problems with the 2020 election. We could go through and talk about what the Secretary of State, the state mistakes they made. We could look at the whole system. I can tell you, though, folks have been heard. The Senate Bill 202 that we passed last year was rated by the Heritage Foundation, the conservative nationwide Heritage Foundation. They rated Georgia after having passed Senate Bill 202 in response to the 2020 election. Is now having the most secure election system in the nation. Is it perfect? No. Did we get everything we wanted? No. Coming out of the 2020 election, the SBU 202 bill that we engage with as legislators, I made 27 requests of what we get put in that bill, 27 detailed requests of specific things that came out of the 2020 election. The final bill had 21 of those 27. Did I get everything? No. Were we able to completely eliminate no excuse absentee voting? No. But 21 of the 27 things that I asked for specifically did get in there, and it is a bill that made a tremendous difference. I think we can move forward in 2022 with confidence. We've got paper ballots. We've got a chain of custody system that is dramatically better than before. We've got watermark paper, all the concerns about fake paper getting in. So is it everything we wanted? No. Is if we made a dramatic step forward from where we were in 2020? Yes. Do we need to keep fighting? Yes. And I'm glad to be looking forward to being a part of that to make Georgia the best place to vote and the hardest place to cheat.
Okay. Scott?
We've got to make sure that every citizen that's eligible and registered gets to vote once and only once. And I think the legislature in the past two years has done an excellent job to ensure that Georgia's ballots are free and fair and our voting system is effective and eliminating potential fraud. Yes, just like probably everyone that's listening to this radio show, were there concerns about 2020 elections? Absolutely. Has Georgia addressed those? In many ways, yes, they have. And you know what? We'll continue to do that. I'll continue to do that in the Senate. I'll continue to fight for the best possible election integrity that Georgia has to make sure that we are and stay the best and most secure place to cast a vote in America.
Okay. Again, in case you're just tuning in, you are listening to all three Republican candidates for State Senate District 37. And now I want to go ahead and move on to health care. I'll go ahead and start with Ed Setzler. Go ahead and assess the state of health care right now in the state of Georgia.
Well, again, Georgia, it depends on what figures you look at. You know, Georgia has, there's some issues with respect to chronic conditions. Now, when you think about Georgia as a state, there's really two Georgias. There's the metro area and there's the rest of the state. You look at the rural poor don't have access to preventative care. There really is a very different picture, and we've been working to try to push through free market systems, pushing better care out to rural areas. That's an important priority. I think when you look across the state, the cost for health care is an issue everywhere. One thing we've tried to lead on as a legislature, though, is to laser in on issues where we can take a targeted approach as opposed to a shotgun blast. You know, the bureaucrats in Washington want us to expand Medicaid. They want us to take this big shotgun blast and just dump more money senselessly into programs that won't really move the needle. We as a state, I'm proud to have been part of this, have laser focused on things like, care for pregnant moms. Care for moms after they deliver. We've extended that window from 2 months to 6 months. We're very, very generous to pregnant moms and young people in need. But we don't just blanket the system with careless blind spending like Washington wants us to. I'm proud that we as a state have targeted through the waiver program specific needs to address specific issues that if Georgians step back and apply kind of the common sense test to have we done the right thing, they can say, yes, this is smart. That response is smart. Yes, thank you for not doing this. There's a whole series of things the left want us to do that would have been just fantastically wasteful. We've been wise enough to sidestep those things and laser focus the dollars we do have on meeting real needs. And I think that's something we can all be very proud of.
Scott Johnson, the state of healthcare.
Thank you. Yeah, so the answer to the very difficult question of healthcare in Georgia has to be innovation and letting the market do the work. That there will never be enough money to provide everyone with all the healthcare they want. Certainly, the state can't provide that. But by targeting issues like rural hospitals, which are in many ways in a crisis. By addressing the issues where there are some counties with one or no doctors and dentists, the innovative approach of telemedicine, telehealth, of being able to take care of students in schools and families at home. As a matter of fact, we have worked very diligently at the State Department of Education to make it possible for students to get telehealth at their own schools, so when they have a sore throat, mom doesn't have to leave and come to take the kid home from school, but it can be addressed with the parent's permission right there with a solution at the school level. You know, the Kemp administration has done a good job of trying to be innovative on the Medicaid waiver approach. However, the Biden administration has been the problem. The Biden administration has shut down the innovative approach that Georgia has tried to push forward, and that's a problem. That's the problem you have when you have a federal government that doesn't want to that isn't innovative and wants to press down a high cost solution to the state of Georgia when states ought to be able to make this decision for themselves, like Georgia.
David?
Okay. Well, I'm against the federal funding to expand medical health care in Georgia. I think, though, I'm a supporter of the Governor Kemp's Pathway to Coverage plan. It voluntarily expands Medicare coverage to tens of thousands of otherwise ineligible low-income Georgians, while also decreasing the number of people who rely on government who can get a job and be self-sufficient.
So I want to make sure what you were talking about, Medicaid, was that the expansion of federal Medicaid, is that what you were talking about?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
And Scott, on the same topic? Medicaid, keep it the same, expand, cut.
So I'm in favor of Governor Kemp or Georgia's waiver program that would expand Medicaid to more recipients than receive it now, tens of thousands of more, but not break our break the future of our state budget by fully funding the federal fully funding of Medicaid.
Ed? Yeah, I believe in the laser targeted approach to target our dollars on folks in true need, as opposed to the Medicaid expansion, which would give young healthy people free health care, disincentivize them to work, disincentivize them to go, you know, take the hard job that's going to get them private sector benefits and put them on the public dole. That is a disaster. That's what Washington wants from us, and I'm proud to have helped lead us away from that solution to target folks in true need, but not bite the hook from Washington.
Scott, can you go ahead and do you have any kind of, and it's such a tricky topic, the topic of mental health. Do you have any ideas as far as a model of how Georgia can improve in that?
Well, I think it's a great question because it's a huge issue for Georgia, and not just for Georgia, but for every state. The right approach to begin addressing the mental health crisis in Georgia is was taken up by the legislature this year. It was much broader in the House and much more perfected when it passed the Senate and was signed by the governor. But it allows the state to spend dollars to address mental health issues, those that and especially those that involve law enforcement. My son-in-law is an officer in Kennesaw, and I understand from a very practical point of view the challenge that law enforcement has with folks who don't need to go to jail, but they do need help. And so I'm actually very proud that Georgia, our legislature, our governor addressed that in this past cycle. And no doubt it is an issue that will need our constant attention in the future, and I look forward to helping address that in the state Senate.
David Delk.
Well, I do know that the mental health bill was taken up, and I think it is a good beginning spot. Also, it has put our law enforcement, it has taxed them, to no means to, try to engage a mental health, person, not knowing what medications they may be on or what medications they're not taking. It's also, I think, a good place for our churches and our 501c3s to engage and to help people who have mental health issues. Having been in the ministry for many years, we dealt with a lot of things, especially when kids came to us and they were talking about abuse problems and that sort of thing. So I think that as we engage this problem, it's a good place for a lot of private sectors and public sectors and people to help become a solution to the problem.
And
there are people who go through life and are otherwise healthy in what you think about in terms of conventional health care, but they have life crises as relates to mental health that can't be calculated. You think about the impact of opioid abuse. I've got family members whose marriages and lives have fallen apart because they took a prescription from a doctor, got addicted to the opioids, and their life fell apart. That's touched so many families. The ability to take health care of otherwise healthy people and direct those dollars towards where the real need is, which is drug addiction or suicide prevention, that's what the high-minded approach that came out of the legislature that was passed, that was signed by the governor this year, did. I will tell you, thankfully, the legislative process worked, and what passed this year did not undermine civil liberties. I had profound concerns about the bill as it started, undermining civil liberties. The ability to commit people against their will to a mental institution is not where we need to go. That was all taken out of the bill, and where we landed was something that allowed folks whose real needs are suicide prevention or drug addiction, as opposed to conventional health care. Health care coverage will now, the public health care coverages will now cover that. And there's incentives for private health care, although that's not been mandated, so that the system of health care in Georgia can kind of move to where the puck is going, which unfortunately is increasingly the direction of suicide prevention and this issue of drug addiction. If we care about people and we see people as being, as having dignity and carrying God's image, these image bearers need to have a system where the faith community, family members can come together with insurance and make this system work, and I'm proud of what we did this year.
David, I was going to say he had mentioned the opioid crisis. Was your comment pertaining to that?
My comment was pertaining to the mental illness, okay, which we have currently are dealing with that right now in one of the members of our family. And so it's been very difficult for everybody to try to come up with an answer to the problem. And we have engaged a lot of different sectors of the community on trying to find help, for our aging parents. And that's watching the mental illness take over a person who was healthy but no longer is healthy is very emotionally charging to the family. But at the same time, there are hopefully more avenues to find help, through this mental health bill.
Okay. Now, I was going to ask you, David, Ed had mentioned that the opioids, and it seems like for some reason it's taken a back seat to the whole COVID-19 thing. Is there anything that you see that the state hasn't done yet that you'd like to get through as far as taking care of the opioid epidemic?
Well, I mean, I don't know all that the state has done, but I can tell you the crisis at the southern border is just making it worse. And as it relates to having worked with students for a number of years and the drug issues that we're watching young people face with, especially after COVID-19 just happened, in which, you know, for a year or 2 years, students weren't allowed to engage with their peers back in school, so they turned to other measures to, you know, spend their time. But the opioid crisis, along with other issues such as trafficking, his, you know, first and dear to my heart, just because of my love for students, my love for young people, I think that needs to be something that we look at and figure out how to get better at it and how to create a communication network that rescues these young people before they get trapped into this.
Ed, was there anything you wanted to add to the COVID? I mean, the opioid.
No, just this is really, Georgia's really led the nation in a lot of ways in, again, balancing civil liberties, but also creating a prescription drug monitoring program where pharmacists and doctors are aware of what people have been prescribed. We've also empowered law enforcement in ways to carry the life-saving drugs. If they come up to somebody that's OD'd on the spot, that can administer those. We've really been leading in that effort. In fact, my Judiciary Non-Civil Subcommittee has really been the center for 10 or 12 bills over the last 5 or 6 years where those issues have been worked out. So it's a detailed part of law. It's a very important part of law. And I think we can be very proud of what we've done as a state. But it's not something we think we're ever – it's never a destination you arrive at. It is a constant fight to stay ahead of crime, to stay ahead of fentanyl coming across our southern border. We've empowered local law enforcement to hammer folks who were perpetrators of that here. We've really locked down on sex trafficking, which, again, that whole sordid underbelly of society is part of is all part of the same nasty system. I appreciate Governor Kemp's leadership in helping us hammer that and really lead other states in how to address those issues.
Scott?
Yeah, I think that your listeners and certainly those of us in this room have all been touched, personally in our families in some way. I lost a member of my wife's family from complications that were from addiction. And it's a sad commentary, and yet we've all been touched by it. But COVID obviously has been exacerbated the problem. Now Georgia has done a better job addressing the COVID crisis than most any other state, and I think we can all be pleased about that. And yet, the crisis continues. We, as has been said, every state, including Georgia, is a border state now, and we are dealing with fentanyl coming across the border. We are dealing with illegal drugs and the things that denigrate our society and devolve it into addiction and crime. And we as a state have to continue to address this issue, the mental health issue that it creates, and the crime problem that's part of that as well.
Now I'm going to move on to something that, on the surface, Bartow County voters might be thinking, why does this impact? But you never know. The residents of an area of West Cobb are going to vote on whether to establish the city of Lost Mountain. And I'd like to see, Scott, your thoughts on that.
Well, you know, I think government is best when it's closest to the people. And in Cobb County right now, we have we've had great government. I mean, I grew up there and moved away for just a little while and lived back there for 30 years now. But as life changes and as it is. Elected officials change, as government changes, we need to address and update the issues that face our county in Cobb and local control. It's not just Lost Mountain. There are four cityhood movements in Cobb County right now, and much of District 37 includes the proposed city of Lost Mountain. I think government that is closer to the people, that is elected by the citizens of that locality, is much more effective than those than being governed by folks who don't live where you live, and that I think is the strength behind the cityhood movements all over Cobb, including the City of Lost Mountain project. And the voters on May 24th will have a chance, and that's the great thing. The voters will have the chance to make that decision on May 24th as to whether or not they want to create that city, and I'm looking forward to that.
David?
Well, of all the topics to discuss that people have, this is probably one of the number one issues I've heard talked about above anything else. And so as I've listened to the people talk about their concerns, you know, about this cityhood, there are two things that people are concerned about. And both are, you know, one represents one side and one represents the other. The first one is people are worried about another layer of taxes. And you've got an older group of people in West Cobb that are concerned, that are on fixed incomes, that are worried. Yes, the promise has been made, no new taxes, but can they trust that comment? And as the cityhood, let's just say it wins and it gets traction over time, how can you make that promise that there's no new taxes? The other side of it is people want to protect poor zoning. They move to West Cobb for a reason. They don't want to see overcrowdedness. They don't want to see industrial. They don't want to see commercial. They want West Cobb to stay green, and they want West Cobb. That's the reason they moved to it. And so I think those two ideas, most people can agree on both of them. Both of them, no one wants another layer of taxes, and everybody wants to protect the community they live in. So that person has to make their mind up. Which one means the most to you? Is it you want to protect your community, or would you rather to pay another layer of taxes to make sure you have a voice, make sure that the zoning issues are not a problem for the future of West Cobb, and make your decision from there?
Ed?
Yeah, the rural residential specialness that we enjoy in South Bartow County is also shared in West Cobb. There's not many parts of Cobb County that share that, but West Cobb, that the area which is proposed to be the municipality of Lost Mountain, still shares that. I think that vision of preserving that specialness is very important. And to preserve that, you need to have elected officials that are accountable to the citizens. Right now, the citizens of West Cobb elect one commissioner out of four that votes, with the chairman, one out of five that they directly vote for. And the decisions that are made about their backyard, they don't have a majority vote over. They may have one commissioner that agrees with them, but can get voted down by commissioners for whom they can never vote. That's much like citizens in South Bartow County, if brought to me recently. They feel like there's changes happening in a nearby municipality that they don't like, but they can't vote for those folks because they're not inside the limits of that municipality. So the same helplessness that a lot of folks in South Bartow feel about a fundamental change to this rural residential specialness that they feel is coming upon them, they feel like they have no control over. That same sentiment exists in the minds of folks in Lost Mountain, and that's really why this municipality that's going to control planning, zoning, parks, and quality of life is so that every single elected official who influences what happens in your backyard is accountable to you, the voter. If there's anything we need elected officials that are accountable to regular folks. And that's what Lost Mountain's about. And that's something that I'm hearing folks in South Bartow say they want more of.
David, is there an issue that we haven't covered yet that you'd like to put out there into the forefront?
Well, I think, just to go back to the issue of election transparency, I would, Ed made the comment on one of my social media posts of signing on to the Cobb GOP's desire to have a greater level of transparency. He mentioned that, in one of the bills that he signed, that he felt like he had taken care of that. But in one of his comments on a post he made, he said that he didn't see 12,000 votes that, could have been a part of this what looked to be voter fraud in 2020. He didn't see 12,000 votes that could have done. But what I saw was that night vote counts stopped. polls shut down. We saw video footage of, suitcases being pulled out from underneath tables. And so my deal is that the transparency of the 2020 election, Ed said he didn't see a problem with it in order to raise a question. So I was just wondering, how he felt about the 2020 election, and can we be assured that that's not taking place again, and why would you not sign on with the Cobb GOP to have greater election transparency?
Ed, would you like to rebut?
I'd be happy to, yeah. I texted the chairman of the Cobb GOP and said I'm glad to help lead on that. I think the question is, and for the record, I've never said that everything's okay. That's simply not true. In fact, I've led to try to take us out of the ditch we were in from 2020. I mean, the facts are, wise old teacher told me one time, believe none of what you hear and half of what you see. And there's a tremendous amount of misinformation out there, and citizens rightly are outraged. They can't trust their news sources. They're not sure who to believe. And the facts are that when you dig into the issues, the state of Georgia has a lot to be concerned about, and it has a lot to be proud of in what we've addressed since the 2020 election. I said earlier, of the 27 things I thought were very important to address in our election system, 27 detailed items to address the specific issues of the 2020 election, I led and got 21 of those things done in Senate Bill 202. Didn't get them all, but I got 21 of 27. Am I happy? No. Have I given up? No. I'm going to continue to fight on the other six, but the 21 of 27 got done because leadership that understands where issues are, understands what's real, understands what's not real, and can hone in on those things and lead 236 legislators to get there is part of proven conservative leadership. Letting your yes be yes and your no be no is that, not making accusations of what folks said and didn't say. The fact is the Heritage Foundation is rated Georgia since the 2020 election, since the changes we've made in direct response to the outrage of 2020, is rated Georgia as having the most high integrity system in the entire nation. Is our work done? No. Is my work done? No. But I've been leading since 2017. On the backside of the 2016 election, my Science and Technology Committee delved into election technology, had four half-day hearings over 2017 to help secure a new system that has paper ballots. Thank heavens we've got paper ballots that we can hand recount as a state. I was part of that effort to make that happen. 6 years ago, we had only digital systems. Imagine if we still had the systems we had before and there's no paper backup. We've got a paper backup system because folks like myself and others led on that issue. And is our work done? No. But have we made great strides? Yes. And we've got to believe things that are true and stop following fakes and have the wisdom to understand where the issues are. And we did that with SB 202 and addressed many achievable things, A, that we can win in court, and B, that can give us confidence in our 2022 election system, even though we're not there yet.
I'll give you one last chance to talk about that, David.
Okay. Well, let me just start with this. A comment that Ed made on one of my posts, it said, it's just that 2020 was so close that the people believe it had an impact on the final outcome. I could not find hard proof of 12,000 fraudulent votes in Georgia. And so if we go to the voterga.org, here are some of the things that were stated about the 2020 election. It said six sworn affidavits from poll workers attest to tens of thousands of counterfeit Fulton County mail-in ballots. It also says State Farm Arena a video shows at least four violations of GA election law. It also says 106,000 Dropbox ballots have improper chain of custody forms. Also, another 1.7 million original ballots, images from the 70 Georgia counties are missing. So I've got a long list of every other thing that went wrong that night. And so I believe that's proof that there was more than just, the 12,000 he mentioned in his post of, fraudulent votes.
I think it's very important to understand that the system exists, that we have, if the shoe had been on the other foot, and Donald Trump had won the 2020 election in Georgia by 11,780 votes, and the Democrats were making the claims that the system has been rigged, that there was irregularities, what standard of proof would we have required? Georgia law requires courtroom caliber evidence to overturn an election. There's not courtroom caliber provable evidence for 12,000 votes. There's courtroom caliber provable evidence for about between 3,400 and 3,500 votes. It's a fact. We have rules of evidence that establish that. Do I believe there is irregularities that are beyond that? Absolutely, that's true. But I don't believe that we can wildly take circumstantial evidence. You can't take things that you can't prove in court and overturn an election. I mean, that's not how our system works. So if you understand this in detail, you have to say, you know what, there are unprovable circumstances we've got to fix moving forward, and we did that in SB 202. That doesn't mean that you overturn the 2020 election with circumstantial evidence. This idea of folks, you know, moving around and GPS tracking we believe they had ballots moving from locations to drop boxes. You can't prove how many ballots they had. You can't throw the entire election out for circumstantial evidence. Courtroom caliber evidence is what it would take to overturn a President Trump victory or a President Biden victory. The legislature acted 20 years ago and said courtrooms are where we establish these things because rules of evidence are what we follow. And we can't take wild claims and overturn a presidential election on that we can darn sure do what we did, which is put in laws in place to make sure chain of custody is fixed. And every single thing Mr. Delt just talked about is fixed moving forward. That's what we did, so we're not going to have these problems again.
All right, Scott?
Let me just say this, and we've already established in our conversation earlier that there were irregularities and issues and a lot of questions about the 2020 election here in Georgia and many other states. And I don't think that your listeners will argue to that, but I think I can say something that every one of your listeners is going to agree with, and this is the most important thing. We are not going to win the 2020 election. It is done. It's history. The legislature has taken steps to address it in Senate Bill 202 and further steps to ensure that, as Heritage Foundation has said, Georgia has the best and most secure election going forward, laws going forward for our future elections. Litigating or refighting the 2020 election is not going to beat Stacey Abrams. It is not going to beat Democrats who would like to take over our state house, our state senate, and it is not going to beat Joe Biden in 2024. That is what Republicans need to be concerned about. That is what Scott Johnson wants. That's the fight Scott Johnson will take. And I am not interested. I am concerned and about the elections in the past, and I think our legislature, our governor has done a good job addressing those, and I'm ready to fight for Georgia's future.
Well, since you're on the mic, I'll let you go ahead, and we've got to wrap things up. Go ahead and give one last hurrah about why people should vote for you for the Senate.
Well, Mike, thank you for having us today. I know all three of us appreciate the opportunity to be here to sit with you here in Bartow County and to show that we share some common ideas, but we also there are some differences but what I want to do is move our state forward to represent the citizens of South Bartow and as well as in West Cobb to take our state forward in securing our Second Amendment, in securing voter security, eliminating absolutely. When I'm on the State Board of Education, I have addressed along with other members the issue of critical race theory to eliminate it and make it absolutely illegal to victimize students or to teach them to hate one another or our government with your tax dollars. Won't happen. And you know what? We need to look to the future. We need to look to Georgia's got a great future. We've got a bright future, and we can do it. We can do it working together. Scott Johnson can lead in the Senate to make that happen. Thank you,
Ed.
You know, I want to just start by first of all thanking you. And as I think about public service, the first thing I want to start with as I talk to potential voters is my heart seeks humility. I'm humbled to be able to serve. And everything I do, I seek to couch in humility and the decency of the common sense values of regular folks. I'm honored to have served, honored to have commanded American troops, honored to have been a business leader, a dad, been involved in youth ministry really my entire adult life. That matters deeply to me. But I think it's important to understand we need a proven conservative leader to serve in the state Senate. We need somebody that has been that is in the face of the forces that come at you at the state capitol. I've beat Stacey Abrams in debate face to face in committee. I've beat her on the floor in debate. I've led on issues like the sanctity of human life. I've sponsored our state's heartbeat bill. I had the full fury of the national left. They spent $500,000 to utterly try to destroy me in a light blue district, and I came back and won as a Republican. I'm not fearful of those things. I've faced down the most powerful liberal forces in our state, and I've won because it takes proven conservative leadership. I've led on the sanctity of human life. I've led on the Second Amendment. I've led on the issues of American values and freedom, you know, giving parents the ability to direct the education, the upbringing of their kids. These timeless things that people of South Bartow County and West Cobb want from their leaders, I'm humbled to have been able to lead on. I'm humbled to have been proven with all the forces of the Capitol pulling you in every direction. I'm humbled to have been able to walk the line, be an unwavering principled conservative, but still work within the system to win victories for regular folks. And at the end of the day, my heart's still regular people. I was a young dad when I first ran for office. I'm still the same, not quite as young, but I'm still the same dad that is fighting for the values of regular folks in the legislature. That's what gets me up in the morning. When I work 50-hour weeks in my day job in the architecture and engineering business, my mind and my heart is still on taking care of regular folks and winning for them at the state capitol and in our community. And that's the kind of leadership I want to take to South Bartow County.
Thank you. David?
All right. Well, thank you for having us, and I appreciate it. You know, at this point in my life, I'm 60 years old, got children, got grandchildren, and, you know, we're kind of troubled by what we see in our country right now. And I think if we continue to walk the path of the leadership that's been in place, I think we need fresh leadership. And I think that I provide that. I've been a community leader. I've been a leader of the faith community in West Cobb for many years. I've led many people to a relationship with the Lord. I've also talked about the sanctity of life. And first, you can legislate morality, but if you transform the heart, then you've got a person for life. And so I've been doing that for many years. But also I desire to create change for the future, positive change, fresh voice, an outsider who's been looking at it at a citizen's point of view for many years, desiring to get in there and make a change for the good for my children and grandchildren, hope that their futures are better than what we are looking at right now. We're a very troubled time right now in our country, and I think an outside voice is the best perspective right now.
And I almost forgot real quick, I'm going to go through the three of you guys. If they want to find out more about David Delk's campaign, where do they go?
DavidDelkForSenate.org. You can also go to my social media page as well.
Scott Johnson?
ScottJohnsonGA.com. ScottJohnsonGA.com. And we're also on Facebook.
Ed?
EdSetzler.com. That's EdSetzler.com. Also on Facebook.
All right. Thank you so much, the three of you, for joining us here and letting the voters of Southeast Bartow County know where you stand. Again, thanks for listening to the WBHF. And again, remember, early voting starting on Monday, the election May 24th. And come on out. It is important. Thanks for listening.